Well, hello, y'all. You guys didn't have anything better. My name is John, and I am an alcoholic. You guys that are new, this is what one looks like. My last drink of alcohol was April 18th, 1996. My home group is called an AA group. We believe in the long form of the third tradition. And as you guys read earlier, my group meets at 6 a.m. on Friday mornings at 1555 Ray Street, and you really got to want to be there. We don't have a lot of deadwood in our group. And as Tom said, we go to Pete's Kitchen, and Pete's Kitchen, by the way, hadn't closed its doors since 1942 when they opened. They're open 24/7, which means this is one of the places I used to eat at about 3 o'clock in the morning when I was in we're about a half block off Colfax for people that have been in Denver. It's a strange street. I don't know what the hell I'm going to say here tonight, but what my sponsor taught me is that I was supposed to share with you in a general way what happened, or what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. So I try to do that, and I don't know that I can really do it in a linear format. And I don't know, maybe tonight I won't. I'll give you one little thing from when I was a kid. This is one of my earliest memories. I'm being honest with you. I was probably 5, and what had happened was my mom and dad had divorced. I was born, by the way, in Kema, Texas. I don't know if you guys know the beautiful, thriving metropolis of Kema. Kema is on Galveston Bay. It's actually a very high-end place. Now, when I was a kid, it was full of commercial fishermen and crew boats and oyster dredgers and stuff. It wasn't a real high-end place. But anyway, I was born in Kema, Texas, and my mom divorced my dad when I was 3. And went home to Mama to San Antonio in a 57 fire engine red Ford wagon with a sewing machine in the back, and me and my brother. And my dad quit his job. He was a game warden. And he quit his job and followed her to San Antonio to woo her back, and he did. And they remarried when I was 5 to each other. And that lasted till I was about 8. And one of my earliest memories is I think what was wrong was the spaghetti sauce sucked. And my dad threw the table on top of my mom and started throwing dishes. And I went out the front door because that was closest. And my brother was caught. He was 8 years older than me. And he was also the one that tried to calm my dad down. And my mom went out the back door. And I went under the front porch and was hugging our collie as my mom came down the driveway and called me over holding her broken arm. He broke it with a sugar bowl. Now, the reason I tell you that it wasn't that just he was an angry man, because he wasn't really an angry man except when he drank. He was one of the most patient, kind, absolutely the most intelligent man I've ever known in my life. He had a photographic memory, and he had speed read. And he could read a book, you know, in about 12 minutes, and then you could say, what's on 67, and he'd quote it to you. And I never knew he was an alcoholic. I just knew that my daddy drank too much. That's what they told me. And the reason I just told you that story is not, all it is to let you know that I never wanted to be an alcoholic. It wasn't on my to-do list, you know. I went on to become a Boy Scout. I was trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, or tried. I worked on Scout Camp staff 2 summers. I was 3 merit badges away from Eagle when I found I found out you could have sex with someone else in the room, for one thing. And I found come on, you did too. I found sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I was off to the races at 15 years old, 1968. a little bit about, I don't want to spend a lot of time with all that crap. I was a little rock and roller. My brother was 8 years older than me, an incredible musician. By the way, alcoholism took him at 38 years old. He went out in the garage and blew his brains out. Had a wife and two kids and a lawyer, wonderful. No problems. And I've outlived him. My dad died in a head-on car wreck at 49 years old, drunk. I've outlived him so far. Alcoholism's decimated my family, completely decimated it. Going to uncles, cousins, and I tell you that to you folks that are new, if you've got alcoholism, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. It's a terrible thing. You may go to some other meetings and they're going to tell you some bullshit. They're going to say some things like, if you're here, you're in the right place. How the fuck do you know? You just wandered in there, maybe. They're going to tell you that they're going to love you till you love yourself. That ain't going to work. They're going to tell you all kinds of stuff. They're going to tell you just don't drink and go to meetings. If I could do that, I wouldn't need the damn meeting. That's the problem here. I can't remember that I wasn't going to drink. You're going to hear a lot of stuff in meetings that sadly is pure D bullshit, and it's real dangerous bullshit if you're an alcoholic like me. Think the drink through. What good is that? That's the problem. That's the problem. Any case, I became a little rock and roller because of my brother. My brother decided when he was 16 to learn guitar. He could play anything when he picked it up. I was 8. He was 8 years older than I. And we were going to be the new Everly Brothers, you know. So at 8, I'm trying to learn guitar, and I was never had the talent my brother did, but I kept after it. By the time I was about 15, you know, I had a little junior high band, and we'd done surf music and stuff, and then. Like I said, the entire country turned on in 1968 from what I could see around me. And I'm living in San Antonio and got in a band and just kept going from there. Essentially on the road from the summer I was 15 for the next 2 years with the band. And then went through that band broke up and reformed without me. And then the next three bands fired me. The last fellow I played for in Austin, Texas, I was exiled to Austin in the midst of that. I was kicked out of school in San Antonio. The fellow that I worked for, I remember what he said. He said, "John, you're really good, but you just can't stay sober for the second set." And I remember what I thought. It's like, what are you talking about? That's crazy. And I was 19. Stuff fell apart very quickly for me. I made a little road trip to change my situation because it was so bad in Austin, and I needed to get away from all those people, and came to Colorado. I left Austin October 20th of 1972, and October 26th I was sitting in San Juan County Jail in Silverton, Colorado with 9 felonies on my ass. 19 years old, and I had a DA shaking his finger in my face telling me I was facing 45 to 360 years in the Colorado State Penitentiary. And it started out with a bottle of bourbon and a snowball fight in the town square in Lake City, Colorado. And it just sort of snowballed. I don't know what happened. It just bad stuff happened. I went on through life, and I've always wanted to be a go-to guy. I'm serious. I always wanted to be the Boy Scout. And I got out of jail, and I went, tried to go to school again, and I met a wonderful, wonderful woman. We ended up getting married in 1977. She lived in Denver. I came to Denver, Colorado. I'd been living in Southern Colorado. And we had a beautiful little girl in 1978. And I tried to do the right thing. I remember promising her when we got married that I'd quit shooting dope. And I pretty much did. I slipped a little bit. And hey, I want to touch on something just for a minute, since I heard so many people when they were introducing themselves as new, as alcoholics and addicts. I was in ANDA for about 14 months here. Alcoholic ANDA addict, a slash. I even tried to go to some NA meetings. I found out that most of the people in NA were much younger than I. They had a lot of tats. They had a lot of metal hanging out of them all over the place. And I'd done more dope than they'd ever freaking seen. I graduated from A.M. McCallum High School in Austin, Texas in 1971. Pure hotbed of sobriety, you know. I thought I'd missed ecstasy, and I was a little jealous. And then I figured out we called it MDA. I am an alcoholic who's powerless over drugs. That's weird, huh? My sponsor helped me find that out by going through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you want to know the truth of it, that little bit about powerless over drugs, it doesn't have a shitting thing to do with us being here tonight. If I'm to stand up and say to you, my name is John and I'm an alcoholic and I'm powerless over drugs, that's just the same as me standing up and saying, my name is John, I'm an alcoholic and I have hazel eyes. I'm 6'3". It has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sorry, if you want to continue to do that and continue to separate yourself, rock on until you can get straight. But it has nothing to do with what we meet for. This is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is open to all who suffer from alcoholism. When they wrote that third tradition, they were talking about inclusivity, not exclusivity. They wanted it to be open to all who suffer from alcoholism, whether they're man, woman, green, purple, whatever. So you can have anything in the world going on. If you're alcoholic, you belong here. But we don't need to know. I'm sorry, we don't need to know. I mean, it has nothing to do with it. We meet here on the ground of alcoholism. So I pissed half of you off. I don't care. I told you I did that for 14 months. Let's see. Maybe I ought to get a little groundwork for that. My longest period of sobriety between age 13 and 43 years was 7 months. Now remember I told you I was in jail for a while. Hey, we had 5 gallons of Jack go off over the officer's kitchen. You know, I don't know if anybody's been in jail. You've been in, there's ways to get loaded in jail. That sobriety came because I had had a DUI with a company truck. I bumped mirrors with a Denver Public School bus. And I wasn't drunk. And this motorcycle cop, you know, was right there. I pulled over and he came up and he said, didn't you see that school bus? And I said, yeah, didn't you see her crawl her fucking lane? And he said, have you been drinking? Well, yeah. Let's talk about that, because this is an interesting little part of this whole deal. That night, that afternoon, I've been running all around town with a one-ton truck, picking up equipment and dropping it off for the company I worked for. Last stop was over at University Hospital in Denver. It's over 9th in Colorado. And just a few blocks around the corner on Colfax was the bar I was a regular at, and I played fantasy football. Okay, I get done at 4 o'clock, and there's nothing more to do. I've called into my shop, nothing more to do. So I stop by Bastion's to pick up my fantasy football results. It's a Tuesday night, right? I walk in, they said, can we get you a drink? No, I've got a company truck out there. No. I swear I must have turned down a drink about 5 or 6 times. Some point in there, I took a drink. I had 6 Molson Ices. I know because I had to go pay my tab, and you always got a 2-for, and I had 5 on the tab the day after my DUI. What happened there? This book calls that a strange mental blank spot. I had walked in there with absolutely no intention of having a drink. I knew it would be the stupidest thing in the world to do. I'm driving a company truck. I just want to get the fantasy results, and we'll argue and make bets and all that, and I'll leave. But I don't. I have 6 beers. And I swear to God, I wasn't drunk. I blew .129, but I wasn't drunk. I'm one of those guys who drove around it in threes, you know. Just get me to the truck and I'll be all right, you know. Come on, can you help me get the key in the lock? Anyway, it's true. Head out the window, one eye closed. You know? I just wanted to point that out, that when I got that DUI that time, I was suffering from one of these things that occurs to us. Now, I was ordered into 9 months of level 2 education and therapy, and they were making me pee in the cup. First every week, it was another $12, and then every other week, and then they stopped. And I remember leaving that place one night and stopping and buying a 6-pack of beer. And I had 2. Now, I don't know about you guys, but what my head said was, we're making too big a deal out of this. This ain't the problem. I didn't think of that. It ain't that big a problem. I tell you guys, within about 3 weeks, there's a 12-pack and a pint of schnapps, and with about another 3 weeks later, I finished that, thankfully, that thing that I had to do for the probation. And I'm drinking piss-worn vodka, and I can't stay sober a day. And I was drinking harder and faster than I'd ever drank in my life. And my head was swimming. I was going, damn. Now, that went on for almost 2 years. I didn't draw a sober breath. It got to where I could go about four and a half hours, and I really needed a drink. I was starting to shake. I managed to keep a job. Now, all this time, my poor wife, you know, it's hard being an alcoholic. Really is. Not everybody has what it takes. You have to be willing to take the love of everyone that cares for you and spit it right back in their face. Break their hearts, and then build up their hopes and dreams again. It's going to be different this time, honey, I mean it. And we mean it, and then break them again. So I've been doing that, and doing that, and doing that. And I don't know what it was that happened on Thursday, April 18th, 1996. I did not want to drink anymore. Hadn't wanted to drink for a whole while, but I couldn't stop drinking. And I tell you, I was blessed with this guy in my life. This was my brother-in-law, and we were drinking buddies, and I loved drinking with Mark. God bless him, I loved drinking with him. He was a sloppy drunk. I always looked good next to him, you know? And, you know, come on, Mark, there's some barf on you, you know? Put your shirt tail in, we're going in this place. And what had happened is about 5 years before that, he had sobered up on me. His dad had drug him off to a spin dry up in Estes Park called Harmony House. And he'd gone to AA and got a life. He got a wife. He got a little company. And meanwhile, I'm going in the tail end of all this. And it's just getting darker and darker and darker until those last 2 years I'm telling you about. My daughter is scared of me. She would either go in a room or leave. She spent a lot of time at her girlfriend's house. My wife absolutely wouldn't talk to me. I still had a job by the skin of my teeth because we're some talented people. We really are. You find some of us really good at stuff we do, and I was really good at what I did. And they tried to keep me. I'm working in the same company that I got the DUI at, in the company truck. Right? I thought I was fired. I found out that, you know, I called my boss and say, hey, I got a DUI in the company truck. He goes, oh, shit, let me call George. He calls back. George doesn't think we can save you. Next day he says, you need to get up to Fort Collins where the company was. Dan, the owner, wants to talk to you. He's scared he's going to lose you. Yeah, you know. Oh, things are looking up. I'm driving a $300 piece of shit rabbit with the plates off the $600 T-Bird. I lost the hood off of that one night coming across I-25 about 11 o'clock at night. It kept popping up, and that night it, boom, went over the top. Hey, I ain't stupid. I'm an alcoholic. I ain't stopping at 11 o'clock at night for the hood off a $300 car. Right? House is falling down around my ears. Headed into foreclosure the second time, and as I said, my wife isn't talking to me. My daughter's scared of me. I told all my friends that had said, have you ever had anybody say to you, man, you ought to do something about your drinking? You ought to lighten up. I don't know how you responded. My response was, why don't you mind your own fucking business and leave me the fuck alone? And they did. They all did. Loneliness such as few know. Thursday afternoon, April 18th, 1996, I made it home from work without drinking. God, that was hard. It was hard. I called up Mark, my brother-in-law, and I left a message, and I made a serious mistake. I told him I thought I needed to go to one of those meetings. Now, I had avoided UA and Ayers. I'd never been to a meeting of A&A. The U.S. government labeled me a severe character disorder. The Colorado Department of Corrections labeled me with a borderline personality with a high expediency factor. You guys know what that one is. You all fucking kind of. That means you want it all and you want it right now. I'd do anything to hide my alcoholism from you, because don't take that from me. Let me play whatever game. Tell me what I got. Let me play the game, and I'll be good. And I would. I'd be good as long as you're watching me. So here I am. You know, the big book has a word about this. It says, faced by a self-imposed crisis, we could no longer postpone or evade. Oh, shit. I did this to myself. That's the first thing there. And we can't postpone or evade it anymore. Here I am. I can't go on drinking. I can't do it. And I can't quit drinking. Well, Mark called me back about 7. And I was drunk. Because I just can't go that long. I met him, and I used to take him over to this little meeting when his sister, you know, I married his sister. They'd get on his case, and I'd drag him over to A&A, and they quit bitching at him for a little bit. I tell you what, I felt something there even that first night. I don't know what it was, but I felt something. I felt like, I've heard it described as like I was home. Or I just felt like there was some spirit there. And I couldn't have told you that. And in fact, I was pretty much pretty belligerent anyway. A friend told me 1 year later at my first anniversary, he said, you know, we were holding hands your first meeting that Thursday night. And after we said the Lord's Prayer, he turned to me and he said, well, that was a good meeting, wasn't it? And I said, well, they're entitled to their fucking opinion. That's what I thought. I went home, and on the way I bought a bottle. And I drank it that night, and I woke up the next morning really sick. And I called in sick to work. It's Friday, April 19th. And I did something I do not recommend to anyone. I shook and sweated and crawled out of my skin for about 3 days in my bed. And that Friday morning, I think I looked at my life, and the most honestly I've ever looked at my life, and all the lies were gone. I think the last one I had was, I'm only hurting myself. You guys got that one going in?
Yeah.
It's a fucking lie, dude. That vodka I tried to pour down my throat splashed on everybody around me. I broke my mom's heart for years. Never understanding the depth. The phone would ring at night and she would wonder what was, is he dead tonight? I went back to that A&A place on Monday night, and Tuesday night, and Wednesday night, and Thursday night, and Friday night, and all day Saturday, and all day Sunday for months and months and months. I didn't know what, I weighed 160 pounds when I got here. I weigh a little more. I couldn't hold a coffee cup with two hands. I couldn't understand a thing you people said. You sounded like Charlie Brown's teacher. And I wanted to understand you. I'd stare at you. I think the reason I kept coming and I was drawn to you is your spirit. I truly do believe this. And for folks that are out there, by the way, my home group meets once a week, but we take a meeting into the detox on Sunday nights into the Samaritan House, where we met Tom 4 years ago last April, on Wednesday nights now. We get together for a potluck on Tuesday nights. We also love hot springs. We go up to the hot springs together on retreats and stuff all the time. But the reason that came to mind is when we're at detox talking to those people there, I don't think they hear our words. I think they feel our spirit. The message of depth and weight that can reach these people is not a message of words. It's of who I am. That's the message of depth and weight. That's just my belief. Any case, I came to AA. I got a sponsor. I became an AA poster child. I did everything they said to do as hard as I could because I was willing to do anything to be someone other than who I was. I couldn't stand being who I was anymore. I emptied ashtrays. I was treasurer of Denver Area Central Committee of Alcoholics Anonymous at 9 months sober. I was involved. They threw a first birthday party, and there's four cakes, three cakes, and ice cream, and a bunch of people, and they're telling me how I'm just a spiritual giant, the coolest thing they've ever met, blowing hot air up my ass, and it's wonderful, you know? Within 2 weeks, I want to blow my brains out. I'm serious, guys. I was stark raving sober. I had not recovered from alcoholism. This book here talks about recovery. It doesn't talk about sobriety. If all you have to offer me as an alcoholic is sobriety, go pound sand. Sobriety is the most painful condition an alcoholic can be in. That's the reason I drank. I didn't like being sober. I got to have something else. I have to recover. And God bless my first sponsor. He didn't know how to help me do that. He sponsored me out of the 12 and 12 and left a bad taste in my mouth for that book. I urge you to read what this book describes it. It calls it an interpretive commentary. Program by one of the co-founders. There aren't directions to the steps in it. The directions to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous are in this book. And I don't know that you need any other one. I haven't in 12 years. I was blessed with the grace to find a man who had recovered from alcoholism using the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. His name was Don Pee from Aurora, Colorado. I chased him around for about 3 weeks, listening to him talk different places, maybe a month. I went up, I was booking a little speaker's meeting, because I was an AA poster child, you know. I'm serious, I was in it with both feet. And he spoke at this little meeting that I was booking, and afterwards I asked him if I could buy him a cup of coffee. And he said, sure. And we're standing there in the Half Measures Lounge of this clubhouse, you know. And that's what we called it. I said, I need help. He looked at me and he just started laughing. He said, yes, you do. See, it's all over me. 14 months removed from the bottle and the booze is all over me. It's all over me. You could see it. I see it with people today. Then I tried to sell myself to him because that's the only thing I need to do. I've done this and I've done that. I've done the steps. I've done the, you know. And he looked at me and he gave me the second piece of truth. He said, John, we can't read the book by ourselves. Then I tried to tell him why I was talking to him. I said, there's something in your eyes. There's a light, a sparkle or something. And he gave me the third piece of truth. He said, John, that's simply the presence of God. That's all. We negotiated a deal. The two requirements that I agreed to is I'd be regular in my appointments and that he would do this with me if I in turn would do it with another. He lived in what I call Saudi Aurora. And if you know Denver Metro, Aurora is way east. I was living way northwest. And I would drive over there every Sunday and we'd sit in two easy chairs and he'd read this book to me, start at the very front, and he'd give me his take on things and we'd share experience and together we would do whatever it said to do. If it asked a question, we'd answer it. If it said to write, we'd write. If it said to pray, we'd pray. In the course of that, I recovered from alcoholism. I can't tell you the date. Somewhere in there. Had some marvelous experiences. Along the way, I learned I'm an alcoholic. He's powerless over drugs. I can't leave that one. He gave me a little set of questions. He said, suppose you know that you're going to lose your health, your job, your car, your family, your house, maybe your very life, if you do that first big old fat line. Now, my experience and what I knew was I could keep away from that line because I quit doing cocaine on my own. He said, okay, suppose you've already done one. And all those things are true. My answer is hell no. I'm going to do all of mine, as much of yours as I can get, and we're going to go find some more. Same question with the bottle. Drink sitting there. I know I can lose all this stuff. Can I stay away from that first drink? I'll drink it. There's two things that make me an alcoholic. I gave you this strange mental blank spot. Remember I told you I got in that DUI? I was trying not to drink. I was really trying not to drink. I hadn't even started the little class. I hadn't gone to court. And I was trying not to drink. And a buddy got married. Bob got married. A gal named Sue. And my old lady was with me. Now, she's pouring the booze out if she can find it. Right? And if she sees me drinking, chances are she's just going to turn and walk out of the place. At the very least, she's giving me the hairy eyeball, you know. So I'm not going to drink. We go over to Bob and Sue's wedding. I am not going to drink. They come around with a tray of champagne. You know what my head says? It's just champagne. I don't even like champagne. You can't get drunk on champagne. It's a toast. It's a soup. Oh, wait. Bob. Next day, I'm on the phone with another buddy of mine, and I'm trying to find out what I did. Because I was I'm a blackout drinker, guys. I'm a pass out or blackout. And I don't, you know, I'll get up and pee in the punch bowl or something. I don't know. Hit on their own media. I don't know what I'll do. The big book talks about that. It says parallel with the sane thought runs an insane thought. Parallel means they don't meet. Sane thought is I'm not going to drink. Insane thought is I don't even like champagne. You get it? The insane thought always wins out and I drink. There's a strange mental blank spot. Parallel reasoning, being of two minds almost. It's like one mind is, no, we're not drinking tonight. Yeah, we are. Oh, no, yeah. You had that? What that means, if you're like me, is you're insane when it comes to the first drink. That's harsh words. But how else do you explain, I roll my car, this was prior to that one, I've had a checkered history with the law and driving and all that stuff. I roll my car that's just paid off. I get another DUI. The old lady comes and bails me out on Sunday morning. She isn't talking to me. I'm definitely out of the big bed, you know. That's out of the question. There's drinking is just, what I'm getting at is drinking has just caused some horrible problems for me, right? And it's Sunday, and 2 o'clock rolls around, and the Broncos are on, and you can't watch the Broncos without a beer, right? That's insane. Some nights I roll my car. Some nights I hit your car and drove off. Some nights I got my ass kicked. I showed up in a lot of beatings when I was drinking. I called them fights at the time. Come on, you guys done it. Throwing them, you get drunk and mouthy if you're like me, and I get my tail kicked. I get 86 from bars. I wake up with the sprinklers on me. I know, where am I? All sorts of bad stuff happens, but that didn't happen every night. Most nights I passed out on the couch. Most nights I went to bed and passed out. Here's the one thing that always happens to me when I have a drink. I get thirsty. Is that you? That's the second part of this disease. First part's up here in my mind. And whatever form it takes, it's going to be different this time. It won't hurt me. It's just champagne, or we don't even notice. We start drinking, and we don't remember. The other part is once I have a drink, I don't know when we're going to stop. It's usually when the insanity passes or you cut me off. Okay, it's a disease of the mind and the body. I tell you what, if you really, truly understand that, and sometimes finding that out is a tedious process. Even sober, finding that out. Our friend Fred in here, he's the fellow that his business had gone off well in Washington. It's the end of the perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. He comes back to the hotel for dinner, and as he comes into the dining room, the thought comes to his head, a cocktail with dinner would be nice. That's truth. Hell, it's truth for millions of people tonight. A cocktail with dinner was great. He's an alcoholic, though. So he has a couple. A little while later, he goes for a walk, right? Comes back, oh, highball before bedtime would be great. Perfectly true if you're not an alcoholic. He has some foggy recollection of the taxi driver picking him up, right? And instead of his old lady at the airport, he goes off on the three-day jag or whatever. He wakes up in the hospital, and there's a couple of guys from AA, and they grinned at him, you know? He didn't like that too much. What they proceeded to do is cite cases by the dozen and pile on heaps of evidence to the effect that he had an alcoholic mind. That process, what process? The citing and piling on snuffed out the last vestiges of hope that he could do the job by himself. That's what has to happen a lot of times in here. We have to come around. We get, you know where these questions are that'll really solve this thing for me? They're on page 44. And actually, that in page 44, because we've got the doctor's opinion before that. So we've got all of these pages up here to lead us to this question. And here it is. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. Yo. That's me. Or if when you're drinking, you have a little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. Yo again. But we have to go through this, many of us, because we're hardheads. We think there's going to be an out. And I tell you what, I don't know, you new guys sitting here, I didn't get here with any bullets left in my gun. I shot all the angles. They talk about the last house on the block. If this thing wasn't going to work, I could not drink again. I could not drink again. I would have been one of those people that had to make the supreme sacrifice because I could not face it anymore. I could not do it any longer. Now, in the course of doing these steps, I've had just some tremendous experiences. I learned I had superior sponsorship. I don't know that I could have had a better sponsor than Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor was just an incredible human being. And most importantly, he loved me and he never lied to me. He just, he was what he was. And he had a lot of experience with us. And he also sponsored me as far as this recovery thing. He sponsored me through the other two parts of our program, because it's all part of our program. We have the recovery program, and then we have the traditions that make up our unity. We have the concepts that make up our service structure. And the way he explained it to me, he asked me a simple question. He said, have you ever seen a milk stool? Now, most people that are younger than me have never seen one. Has anybody ever seen a milk stool? How many legs do they have? Three. They're always three. You know why? Three legs won't rock. You set them on any kind of ground, three legs won't rock. And when you're milking, you don't want to scare the cow. If you go out there with a four-legged stool, it might rock. In fact, it probably will. And you'll scare it. You want the cow to be calm. If all you have is recovery, you got one leg on the ground. Why don't you get some more down there? Get something solid under you. Now, I was blessed with a full-service sponsor. I've heard people, I had a gal from New York call me up a while back, and she said, do you have any experience with a service sponsor? I said, no. I have a full-service sponsor who took me through all of this. I was blessed. I don't know how to repay you for what has been given me. Not only have I not had to drink again, the killing myself stuff, that's way, way gone. I have a life that makes sense to me today. I'll give you one. I'll give you a little hook. I can have one thought at a time, and it can be a quiet one. You ever wanted that? Okay, I can do that. I've been given a life that is so incredible. This last weekend, Tom and Nick are a couple of my guys. Three of us came over, and our dear friend Mike picked us up, and we went up to, how do we say it? I can't say it right.
Lava
Hot Springs. We did a weekend with a bunch of folks from Idaho. The Spearhead Group, not fish, Spearhead Group, from over in, over west of there, I think. But anyway, we went up and did that. Last year, Tom and I got to come with those same people. We went up to Coeur d'Alene and talked up in Coeur d'Alene last January. Down at Fellowship of the Spirit South last April. I'm going to talk there April 12th. People flew me over to Ireland to come do a weekend with them. And they wouldn't let me pull my wallet out. And just the most marvelous people in the world. And what I'm getting at is Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life that I never, ever, ever could have possibly dreamed of. And which I am, and I'm happy and joyous and free. Now, you remember back when I told you that I was sitting in that room on Monday night, Wednesday night, Tuesday night, or Thursday night, Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, couldn't understand anything you said? You know the first thing I heard? The first stuff that made sense? It was a guy, and he may be in here. I wouldn't recognize him if he walked up to me. Was sitting across the room in this meeting, and he said, if you are alcoholic, you never have to drink again, and you can be happy, joyous, and free. And I heard him. Now, it took me a while. I just told you it took me a while. If you're just going to meetings and not drinking, and meanwhile you're, you know, kicking the old lady and yelling at the dog or whatever you do, there's so much more. You can recover from the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, this way you've been feeling, the life you've been living. It's there. I didn't think this thing would work for me. I really didn't. I looked at those steps on the wall, and I'm a sharp guy. I really am a sharp guy. And I just thought, this has nothing to do with the $300 piece of shit rabbit. You know, my economic problems, my wife problems, my job problems, my neighbor problems, my daughter problems. And you kept saying, just do this, just do this. And when I finally found someone to ask and asked the right guy and went through this thing, something changed in me and all that other stuff went away. Now, my life may not make sense to you, but to be honest with you, I don't care. It makes sense to me. And it's a life I wouldn't have dreamed of having. I just wouldn't have dreamed. I couldn't have imagined these things. Being here tonight, talking to you guys, I thank you so much. I thank these guys in this group that, you know, have the faith to put up a South Texas peckerwood like me. And, you know, I'm a bedwetting drunk, guys. You know? And let me talk to you for a little bit. And just hope that somebody out there says, you know, maybe this thing will work for me, if it can work for a jackass like that, you know? and my experience shows, yes, it can. It can work for you. And you can have, if you're alcoholic, you never have to drink again. And you can be happy, joyous, and free. Now, I'll leave you with a little corollary to it, and this is the one that gets people. But we mean business. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.